Brand new material from certainly brand new on the radio anyway from Stackridge, and joining me in the studio now, Mike Evans, who is the violinist in Stackridge, and Cron Walter, who was and is again the bass player in Stackridge.
Certainly am.
And it's good to have you both here. I want to talk about the future, but first I want to put it all into context. Stackridge, I said earlier on today, were a much loved Bristol band. You got five, I think I'm right in saying, five albums out on major labels, and almost made the real big time, but never quite fully cracked it as much as you would have liked to expect. But you were very, very busy, very popular in some parts of the world. Take me back to the beginning, Cron, first of all.
The beginning. In the beginning.
Yes, in the beginning. I want to hear
In the beginning, there was Andy and me. In Yatton, I suppose you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
That was 30 years ago. 30 years ago this Christmas, in fact.
Gosh.
So it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It developed from there, really, with anybody who happened to show an interest and had some equipment. That's how it started off. And a vehicle.
Even more important.
And some money, basically.
Yeah.
So the first newcomer to come along was Mutter, I think. And then James, and then Mike, sometime later, after I'd been sacked.
You were reinstated, weren't you?
I was reinstated, yes, but I was sacked for, I can't disclose why, but there we go.
We can.
But it's a family show, so perhaps not.
Oh, perhaps not.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so that was how the band kind of evolved, but you were first playing around Bristol, but quite quickly it seemed you were actually, you had an agent in London, and you were gigging around the country, and then there were record deals. I mean, you did seem to go quite quickly in that direction.
Well, we were with an agency called John Sherry, and John Sherry moved his agency to London in collaboration with Miles Copeland at my Swish offices in the West End, and everything seemed to go into a different kind of gear at that stage. We were gigging an awful lot, very, very much around the country, several places already were sort of clamouring for us to come back because they loved our wackiness, I suppose, or something. They must have liked something about us anyway.
Yeah.
And it just it just grew from, it grew out of that. Lots and lots of live performances, not so very much broadcasting initially, but when we started making records and they sold quite reasonably well, and it just snowballed from there, I suppose.
And you were signed first to MCA, which is a major label by anyone's standards. How did that come about?
Oh, that came about through their A&R, or one of their A&R department, was invited by Mike Turpin and John Sherry to come and see the band, and he accepted the invitation, came down and signed us pretty much on the spot.
But he actually came to Bristol?
No, no, I believe he first saw us at the good old Marquee Club.
Oh, right.
Yes, but he did come down to Bristol subsequently in order to cut the deal with us. Mm. So that was nice.
Was that an exciting time?
Very, very exciting, yeah. Very exciting. Our feet rose momentarily off the ground.
And what were the downsides of that? I mean, having been excited and going into a big studio to cut an album and all the rest of it and being a melody maker and...
I don't know whether there was a downside. There wasn't time to think about it. Yeah. It was just happening all around us. It was happening to us, and it's a bit like you step into a lift and somebody presses a button and that's it until you hit that floor. And it's that kind of feeling of being not trapped. It wasn't claustrophobic in any way. I suppose we could have got off at any stage if we wanted, but it was so, basically, I suppose, so exciting. Just enjoyed every minute, pretty much, although the downside was doing sardine impressions at night on various people's floors, especially a group of girls in London who will need no introduction to well-known groups of fans that we have, the good old girls in London that put us up for, so nobly supported us over several years that we were trying to make it in town.
When was it that you got that first record? What chronologically?
That was back in 1971, and that was while Cran was in
abeyance.
In a sin bin.
Is that what you were? Is that what you call it? In abeyance.
In the sin bin.
I'm not quite sure what abeyance is. It's probably something grave digging is more like it. Yes. So it happened during the February of I think that year 1971, and we made the record with Fritz Schreier. Who used to be one of the Four Pennies, and he produced the record for us, and it was released in the summer of 71.
Did you feel a bit fed up about this, Cran, having been fired, and then the next thing is they get a record deal and they start to make the big time, as it were?
Not really, because I was making money and they weren't.
How true.
So, whereas I had plenty of beer money, they probably didn't, you see, so that compensated for the lack of kudos. So I wasn't terribly upset.
So why were you tempted to go back again then?
I wasn't. I was asked.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure why. I think that they weren't weird enough. I think that was the problem. So they thought I might add a touch of bucolic weirdness, to the group. And that's what happened.
You did add bucolic weirdness to the group?
I don't know about that, but I actually did rejoin the band.
It's the only person, I think, in history ever to have time added on for bad behaviour.
Well, what about the music? How much did that alter, Cran, from yours and Andy's original vision, if you have one?
Well, I think it's obvious it was James's influence, because when the group first started, Andy and I were really trying to recreate, one of the progressive rock bands of that era, in other words, blues bands that use more than three chords.
Yeah.
I think it was what it was about.
That's
really
a fair description.
But I think James altered that course somewhat because of this. He came along to the group with a telephone directory thickness catalogue of songs. Everybody else used to write things on bits of paper and think things up in pubs, where James had already got 500 songs written ready and was just looking for a group to perform them.
The pages actually were yellow, weren't they?
Because I think that...
Where did you find him? Where did you find James?
I think Andy found him somewhere.
Yeah? Yeah. What, in Bristol?
Oh, yes, in Bristol, yeah. He did... He was well known in Bristol at that time, playing in other bands. I forget the name, but might know them.
I think he was playing with Dawn at the time.
Dawn, that's right. That's
when he made his approach. Yeah.
That's right. I knew it was
going
way
fish. Back. That's, yeah. Something to do with fish. Yeah.
Something to do with fish.
Everything's to do with fish,
that's
isn't it?
Right.
The first time I ever saw you, we were sort of on the same bill, except that you only got to play that one number. It was a free festival outside the Observatory on the Downs. Do you remember
that? Yes, remember that one.
And I just came to Bristol, and Al Reed and Terry Brace said to me, why don't you come up? And Stackridge at top of the bill, we thought, wow, we might get to meet them, you know. Little did we know. So we caught a bus over, me and Pete Keeley, as we were, and in Strange Fruit. And we did our bit, and by the time that you guys plugged in, Mr. Plug turned up and very quickly pulled the plug. But that was my first... Do you remember that crime, that gig?
I don't think I was there.
You'd already been fired, I
think. I would have been fired, yes. He was obviously a very sensible policeman, and I got
very sensible,
full support.
Yes. Yep, yep, yep.
And, I mean, you are now about to reform, so before we talk about the future, let's put a line under Stackridge as was. When did it all fold up in the end?
Well, it was on the 7th of April, 1976, in Yeovil Town Hall.
Really?
That was it.
You have a very clear memory of that.
I've got it written down on my notes.
Oh, okay. And why did you not get on there? Just had enough?
I think that everybody's had enough by then. It had run its course.
I think it started to go slightly pear-shaped. We'd just done the third album we recorded with George Martin, and I think that sent perhaps one or two wrong messages through the band. We'd been working very, very hard. We were probably, I think, at that stage, over-fatigued. Mm. And it was a bridge, not so much a bridge too far, but a bridge too far too soon. And I think it started going pear-shaped from there. Various people became uncertain as to exactly what they were doing with their lives. No Nation, No Pact, but I think it made all of us think in perhaps it gave us a fresh insight on what actually was happening. And I don't know whether it was probably a mixture of things, maybe fear, uncertainty, and certainly fatigue, things started to go, within the relationships within the band, things started to go wrong. So to draw a veil over the details, which are, you know, perhaps, they're water under the bridge now.
Mm. I mean, it's, for a band to be together for that length of time, it's pretty good going anyway. Most bands aren't, actually, are they?
Because
you talked about, you know, four transits and sleeping on people's floors. Mm. There's only a certain amount of time that you can do that for before some of the romance starts to sort of fly away, don't you think?
Keith, that is the romance.
Yeah, for a bit.
The first 10 miles, usually.
What do you think, Crun? You're smiling Riley.
What do I think about what, Keith? Sorry.
Well, the question I asked, please pay attention, please. I used to teach boys that. That's why I gave up teaching. What is the point of me sitting here asking you questions?
Probably have to talk to you, Crun.
Well, half the time it's difficult to know who was actually in the band.
Yeah.
So it's quite exciting some mornings to as you meet new people that weren't in it the night before. So I think that was one aspect which kept it fairly interesting.
Yeah.
You get got into the habit of being nice to everybody because you might be stepping out on stage with them the next evening. We became very nice people all of a sudden.
I do seem to remember that there were sort of itinerant population that fled through Stackridge towards the end.
Yes, that's quite true.